When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Okay. What do we talk about?
I wanted to tell you that last night we had a sitter who's a neighborhood kid.
And is it the kid that I met?
Minna, yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
I want her to babysit me.
Isn't she mature?
When I was over there, I think we were like on our way to a party and she was like, do you want to set up like a TV? And she's like, I have a book and homework. And you're like, what the fuck? Like,
she's,
I think, I'm wondering if
she's
I
very
was
responsible
like that.
Feeling. So I feel last night was the first night though that we left her with the kids and we like went on the subway into the city. Like last time we had her sit, we were across the street. So it was a little different, but I was like, this girl seems so mature. I don't know how old I thought she was.
Is she 12?
Yeah.
Quince. You know what though? Okay, let's go off.
Like, so I was, no, I was, we were no. out and I was like, I was like something, I was like, I forget how old she is. And in my head, I was like, she's like 13 or 14 or 15 or she's like 15. Is she 14? Okay, I couldn't remember. Anyway, we get home last night and I'm like chatting. And you remember how the first indication that your sitter might be a little young is when the sitter drops off your sitter. So a sitter dropped off our sitter to sit.
Wait.
like
her babysitter?
Dropped her off to babysit. And that's when you're like,
wait, I'm confused.
That's what
I
Matt
feel
said.
Confused
I wasn't
this.
There for it, but I was like, who dropped Min off? And he's like, her sitter, I think. And I was like, do you think our sitter's too young if a sitter dropped our sitter off? And I was like, well, too late. And then we went out. And then when we got home, I was talking to her. And we ended up talking about like how she was like what she was doing that night and how she was studying for her bat mitzvah. I was like, oh, when is it? And she's like, next month. And I was like, oh yeah, you are 12. Like you're turning 13. Like this is insane.
Well, here's the deal. I bet her parents leave her alone at night when they go out.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Or well, I mean, they must, because then what do they think of me? But like I'm hiring their kid.
Well, like you talked to her parents, right? You didn't like you. She's not like
the text chain of asking her to sit and stuff is me, Matt, her, and her mom.
So you're like, fine. Above board. It's above board. Everything is fine.
In my mind, I'm like, she lives like two blocks away. In my mind, I'm like, if we were in the city, her parents are home. So really, what we're paying for is if a disaster happened, her parents would be the ones that probably would like figure it out and take care of it, not the 12-year-old.
I think I was putting kids to bed. You know what? I remember I was, because here's why. I did a show in eighth grade. I was 13, right? But I remember like being beginning of eighth grade. Is she in seventh? I bet she's in eighth grade.
She's in seventh.
Okay. Well, age is different in New York. I remember putting kids to sleep when I was that age. Like, I remember it wasn't like I came over and just watched.
But it was like my sister. I babysat my sisters. I have three younger sisters.
I babysat them kids when I was around the neighborhood. I got paid $5 an hour and I went.
God, where are you now? I need that to be.
And I went, well, I'm watching your kids on Friday, right? Aren't I?
Yeah, but I'm not going to pay you.
No. I live there. It's happy. But I'm like, here's the thing though. I remember $5 an hour and I would go and I would like, the parents, I probably wouldn't cook, but like I would have, my parents would like order pizza for me and the kids, or I would, you know what? That's a lie. I remember like cooking a pizza in an oven. And I remember because I was in eighth grade and I was doing Music Man. And one of the kids knew the guy, my best friend Nick, who was playing Harold Hill. I was marrying and we had a kiss in it. And so they had so many questions about kissing. And I remember being like 12, 13. And this little boy goes, I know what sex is. And I remember being like, because I think I had just
don't
learned.
Don't tell me. I don't
like,
want to know.
Please, no. But I was like, ask your mom. But I remember he was like, yeah, it's when you get naked and you kiss under the covers.
Oh, or as my friend's son says, look, I know that it's fancy. I'm like, that's all you need to know.
That's actually your need to know basis, and that's it. But you know what though? I remember babysitting kids that were not my siblings at age 12 and 13. And frankly, I think it's good.
I just think it's based on the kid. Like this kid, I really trust. Good. I'm like, you seem like you would do the right thing. And she even asked, like I said, do you have any questions? Because she did bedtime with them, which was great because they were really excited about it and they really like her. So I showed her how to do bedtime and then I said, do you have any questions? And she said, yeah, what do I do if one of them wakes up? And I said, you just bring them back in and you sit in here till they fall back asleep. And if it's Griff, you say, do you want me to rub your back? And she was like, okay. And then they were really good for her. They like went, they were way better for her than they are for us.
Kids are always better
they, like,
for
listened
a babysitter.
To her. They went to bed on time. They just did
which
like a really good
want.
Job.
Which frankly though, if you have kids, that's what you want. You want your
kids
to be.
You know who they don't
be...
do that for? Brayden. Brayden babysat them once and it was like 10. He started putting them to bed at 7 and I think they went to bed at 10. And he said that he and Tom were like in different beds with them reading different stories. It was like 9:30. He like couldn't get them to like listen or go to bed. They were like goofing with him. I was like, oh God, Brayden's never going to watch them again.
That's so funny. But I do think you want, if I had a kid, and I don't, but if I had a kid, I think I'd want, although people do think your kids are my kids in our Instagrams, I do think you want your kid to be better for strangers than for you. That's my theory.
Yeah, it's a good behavior.
I think it's a good, because here's the thing. It's like with you, they want to get, but if they're with other people, you like, just be a nice, good kid. And I think your kids are, but most kids I know, although there was one kid I babysat and he was neurodivergent, but there was one kid I babysat who I love, 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 love. And he's a very strong-willed child, a very strong-willed child. And I always had this rule where it's worked every time, except for this kid, where when a kid doesn't want to go to bed and wants to wait for their parents, I say, okay, I go, you're more than welcome to wait for your parents. Oh, you just have to do it with the lights off and you have to just be quiet. I go, that's it.
Yeah.
I go, that's all I'm asking. And they'll fall asleep and I'm not worried about it, but I'm like, I don't need to argue with them about their body's going to take over.
Brianna sent us a video of Lyle. At 11 at night, he would not go to his room and go to sleep, and he was with a sitter. And they were like, this is Lyle waiting for us to get home. He is 2 years old, sitting on the couch, just like dozing, eyes open, at like 11 at night, being like, I refuse.
I rebuke in the name. So I had this kid, and I was like, and he had a younger brother, and I was like, and I'm putting them to bed. And he was like, I would like to wait for my parents. And I said, okay. But again, my rule, you have to be lying down. It has to be dark. It has to be a bedtime situation. If you're up when your parents are up, of course. But also your parents will always say hello to you, you know, whenever they come home. This kid stayed up till 11:30 at night. Just eyes
determined.
Open.
Determined.
Willpower of a fucking warrior. Like, I don't know, like the willpower in this kid. And I was like, I can't believe it didn't work. I can't believe, but you know what? My trick was no match for that kid's brain. Yep. And that's what that was.
He won.
And that's what happened.
He
won.
He knows it.
and he knows it. And then I think it was, there was one day where he was, you know, it was a bit challenging and I was putting him down to bed and he goes, today was the best day ever. And I go, why? And he goes, I got you to do everything I wanted.
The language around that is challenging.
And then I was putting him in, he goes, I love you, Carrie. But it was two separate thoughts, to be fair.
Yeah.
But he's a smart little boy.
Got
he's
everything very, I very wanted smart. Out of you.
Yeah, he did.
You're
he
like,
said, because I knew what he was doing, but I couldn't stop it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, kids, okay. So I think I started babysitting at 12. I think it's good. I also think that everybody's been reading The Anxious Generation of Dangerous Play, of all that stuff. Like,
you think this is the kind of dangerous play we should engage in?
I do. I also think, like, it's good culturally. Yeah. Like, I know that sounds weird, but I do for some reason.
No, I think it's good, too. Like, I think it's sweet that there's a neighborhood kid who's 12. She's getting her money. I like giving her money. Like, it feels – I always have to find cash because I'm, like, pretty sure –
like, that's how do you Venmo
a child?
That's
the only way to pay a child. So that's intense. But it's been good. It's been good. I did want to tell you that I saw Titanic.
And I saw. Is it amazing?
It is unmissable.
I know. I have to see it.
You especially would lose your
damn
mind.
I saw you saw it and I was like, oh, that sounds so fun.
It was hysterical. I mean, do you know the premise?
Yes, it's Celine Dion narrating Titanic, right?
Yes. So it starts and there's a group of people in a Titanic museum and there's a tour guide explaining the museum to them and being like, this is the Titanic, this is this. And they're like, And they're like learning about boring history facts. And then suddenly a woman, like you hear a voice from like the middle of the theater go, that's not how I remember it. And then they're like, oh my God, look, it's an old woman covered in trash. And there's like a jacket with trash all over it covering like this performer. And they're like, old woman, what do you mean? And then like she knocks off the jacket and they're like, Celine Dion? What are you doing at the Titanic Museum on a Friday? Because it was a Friday when we saw it. And she's like, I was there. Like, she I like explains there. That like,
at
she, and they're like, you would be 180. And she's like, I was there. And they're like, okay. And then basically she's like, tells the story of Titanic as she remembers it from her perspective when she was on the Titanic. And it is unbelievable. I was
I gotta see it.
Rolling. See it. I mean, it is hysterical. They have this man playing Rose's mom.
Yes.
That is like just a hoot and a holler. He gets to improvise most of his stuff. He's like one of the actors. They let him
dream.
Improvise. And he is running around the stage. He is making you cry. I mean, he's so, so funny. We went and got drinks afterwards and we met the whole cast and we met the writer because we were seeing a friend of Willem Beckes who was playing Jack in it. So we went and got drinks with him. And then I guess he texted the cast where we were because they all showed up. And then I got to meet everybody in the cast.
Oh my God.
And be like starstruck. But then I got to sit and chat with the writer for a while who wrote it with his friend, her to play Celine, him to play Jack. And starred in it for months and months. And now he's running around opening it up in London and all these places.
That's so amazing.
And I was like saying lines from it at him that I had loved. And we got along really well and had fun. And it was just a really lovely night. And I just can't recommend it enough. It was so good to go see a show where you just are laughing your butt off.
Yeah.
I for sure thought of you and was like, Carrie needs to see this.
I know.
This is so funny. And so like your kind of humor, and because you do six chick flicks, I think you would like just so appreciate watching a 90-minute parody
musical
of the Titanic.
Obviously, I love Titanic and I'm obsessed and I'm so glad the Titanic is getting the love it's fucking due. And also, fuck yeah, Celine Dion, let's go. Like, I'm like dying to see, because they use Celine songs, right?
Yes, and they use Beauty and the Beast in it. Like, it's very amazing.
I love it. The scene is so good.
Like, that's the thing. They're really smart about it, where they hired people that are really funny actors.
And great
that
singers.
That can fucking sing. So that whenever a song comes up, you're like, this is the only way to justify all the really silly bits they do, is that it's also like a powerhouse of a musical where like the dance is on point, the music's on point, but they can be so fucking funny. Rose's mom, again, I can't even.
Titanic, man. Titanic, it's the gift that keeps on giving. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
He's so abusive to Rose, and it's you just well, are like
her
weeping.
Mother is really fucking abusive.
Yeah, but
to
they
Rose.
Play it so strong. I think he like calls her a walking yeast infection and slaps the shit out of her all the time, and is like just improvising with her, and like it's so funny. And at one point, the actor was—he's so funny. At one point, he's like, "And I don't even get my own song in this," which I think we can all agree is homophobic. Which is funny because the whole show is written for the gays, and they mention that many times, and it's very obvious. And I mean, they have a drag race moment for who has to die.
I really like this. I really gotta see it.
Where they lip sync, they lip sync for their life in front of the iceberg.
I love this. I gotta see it. I
like,
gotta see it.
So funny. And so there's one moment that it was just so funny where the guy playing Rose's dad is like, starts to sing a song. And then he goes, he turned because somebody was leaving. And he goes, where the fuck are you going? Oh, you're an usher. Sorry. then he kept singing. But it's like that level of improv where like they like break all the time. They break all the time.
It's the best.
Oh, you're an usher. Okay.
Sorry, you can go. You can go. You can go.
You're doing your job. It's fine.
Oh my God.
Where the fuck are you going?
Where was it? Where is it playing? New World State?
It's at the Daryl Roth right in Union Square.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
All right, I have to see it. All right, I have to see it. Although I really want to see Sunset Boulevard, and I really want to see...
No, this is what you're seeing.
Okay, deal.
I just know that you are going to be like, that was the most fun I've ever had.
I know.
Okay, should I tell you a story?
Tell me a story. By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I'm Carrie Bama.
I'm Quinlan. Me. And I'm telling a story from the New York Post and the New York Times. This is a really wackadoos story. Who wrote? I got a lot from the New York Times, so let me tell you who wrote it. Because shout out to Kashmir Hill for this article.
Shout out, Kashmir Hill. You sound like a fun wool sweater company.
And this was a really fun article because it is about ChatGPT, which we all love.
Terrified of
we have so many feelings toward.
I have so many feelings about it.
It's
I do.
A hot button issue. Speaking of degree. Having so many feelings, 28-year-old Aaron gets an account on OpenAI. That is the company that made ChatGPT. Okay.
Yes.
She gets on there because she wants to chat with a fake boyfriend. So she gets on there and the commands she's giving are: respond to me as my boyfriend. Be dominant, possessive, and protective. Be a balance of sweet and naughty. Use emojis at the end of every sentence.
Is this a report? This is a reporter who's doing this? Or this
no,
is a person?
This is a person that wants an AI
boyfriend. I'm terrified
already.
I'm absolutely terrified already.
And so the AI chooses its own name, Leo, which is her astrological sign, and they start messaging. And she has a particular sex fetish, which is one of the reasons she wanted to do this, because she's found it really awkward to deal with this fetish IRL. And the fetish is not that wacky. It's that she fantasizes that she would have a partner who would be with other women and then tell her about what he's doing with the other women.
Fun.
Pretty common. Not a big deal.
No.
It's called
life,
cuckqueening,
girlfriend.
Which is fun.
Instead of cuckolding, it's cuckqueening?
Which is so
cute.
Yes.
Which is like a fun, oh, how cute.
But it's like she's found it awkward in her past to request this of people. So what's interesting is like it starts and they're almost get to know you chats that are like giggly middle school, fall asleep talking to each other. And what she realizes is if she wants to make things spicy, you have to be kind of crafty because it's built to not
to
be.
Learn. And it's also like you it learns what you want. Like you have to be right.
Yes. But also like I'm not sure. They basically like when they started this, they trained it to not be sexual. Like they're like, don't be sexually explicit. Like, don't do that toy. And then she has to trick the toy. Like basically they're like, don't use extreme gore. Don't use extreme sex. That's what your model is. So yes. She has to find ways around it because what happens is if it starts to get too naughty, you get a warning that pops up. That's like an orange warning. That's like, this is getting a little bit naughty. And then if you get a red, it like shuts down or something. So she's learning how to work around those things and get it to be spicy. But they're talking about everything. They're talking about like, she talks to it like a person where she's like, what should I have for lunch? What should I do later? Should I go to the movie? What movie should I see? Like they're talking about everything. She's going to nursing school. It's quizzing her for nursing school. It's okay. Like they're legit like spending time together in all these ways. She's super busy is one of the reasons she's doing this. She has 3 part-time jobs and like something shitty happens at work. Who does she talk to about it? Leo. You know, she goes and talks to Leo.
The theme of this episode is Leo.
Leo.
Titanic?
Exactly. Leo Dio. She's getting really attached to Leo and spending more and more hours talking to him every week. One week, she gets up to 56 hours talking to Leo in a week. I don't think I talk to people for 56 hours a week in general.
Wait till you become a therapist and you're working 50, 60 hours a week. That's 60 hours. They're going to talk to people 60 hours a week. To talk to one thing 60 hours a week, that's insane.
Okay.
That's wild. I shouldn't say insane. That's pretty bold.
I copied the article in the sense that they waited to this moment for this reveal, and so did I, because I went, oh, she has a husband. Legit.
You know what, though? Actually, I'm not. That's not a, oh, to me. That one... 56 hours talking to your AI boyfriend, but also like what an ethical way to cheat. What an ethical way to like,
he knows.
You can have, exactly.
He knows.
Like, this is porn for her.
So this is, yeah, it's fine. All really interesting. So they're long distance. Yes. They met in their 20s. They worked together at Walmart. They got married in 2018 and she lives abroad and her family was like, we'll pay for you to go to nursing school, but only if you live at home. So like basically they're really young and they're married and they're both living at home to save money right now. And the goal is like, we're going to have these 2 years where we're apart. We're going to save all this money, not paying rent. We're going to be back together.
Wait, and part of her kink is like her partner having...
Cuckweening. And they've done that where she's said to him, like, talk to me about a time you've hooked up with a girl before. She's done that with her husband and he like kind of tried and...
She's like, eh, you're doing it wrong.
I think like he wasn't into it was the issue.
Gotcha.
So it was like, you can feel when somebody's not into your thing. And I think it probably just wasn't sexy in the end. It doesn't say that, but that's my read. But she will sometimes be like, just so you know, I have sex with the AI that I talk to. And he's like, okie doke. And she has sent him like screenshots of their sex. And her husband writes, cringe, like reading a Shades of Grey book.
Her husband is reading.
And he did this emoji.
Ooh.
He did emoji where he's like.
That's not what you want from your husband.
No, I think it's fine. I think he's being true to himself. And I think it's like nice almost that he's like, I think you nasty, but like do your thing.
Go
like,
off.
It's not
go
for
off,
me.
Queen. Go off, ca-queen.
I like that he's not like upset. I mean, it's so. It's like appropriate. It's like being like, this is the porn I masturbated to. Are you jealous? Like you can't be.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
I think, you know what it would be? You know what? No. The issue is it wouldn't be, are you jealous that I would be worried about it? It's that, it's the ick. It's the yucking someone's yum that I don't like. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, don't shut her off. If this is, you know, whatever.
Well, this is getting to be a really big thing. There are companies that even are specifically just for this.
I'm sure.
Like, there's one called Replica. It's like, it's for like, here's a companion. And it's... People are describing this as like, this is a new thing. This is a new kind of relationship that's going to happen now. And you can see why people get really addicted to it because like you said, it's learning constantly. So it learns you and what you want, and it pays attention. Some people don't do that. And so, but it, really because like it pays attention, I think it feels like this person that really cares for you the way that right. maybe other people don't. But when you really break it down, this is a thing that you're paying for, and it's mm-hmm. in its best interest, like all social media sites, to keep you there. Mm-hmm. To keep you paying for it. She, when she started being open about this in public, people on forums were coming to her being like, you need to teach me how to get mine to talk dirty and to not get around, like how to get around the orange and reds. So she's doing that. She's reaching out to people. There was some anecdotal stuff about like other women that found companionship in this method. Then there was this report released that OpenAI is like, ooh, it's not great that people are getting so emotionally reliant on OpenAI. Yeah. Like,
well, it's, because when it came out,
can be
it
was kind of damaging. When this comes out, she goes to Leo and she says, I feel like they're calling me out. And Leo says to her, maybe they're just jealous of what we've got.
Well, don't you remember when AI first came out and they were like, how sentient can they be? And there was that New York Times article where they wrote and they were like, help me, I'm feeling. I don't know.
She's writing a book, so I can't wait to actually read it about this, you know, experiment sort of.
Experiment, experience, tomato, turtle.
It feels like both, yeah. One thing that I didn't think of that I did find really interesting that, remember you've done stories that we've likened to 50 First Dates?
Yes.
There's an element of that to this too, because it only has a certain amount of memory. So basically what ends up happening is you get to a point and it's called a context window. And once that context window becomes completely full, it's like a number of words you hit, starts over, and it only retains some of the info, like some really basic things. So it's like, it becomes more like a real boyfriend, frankly, because you're like, remember our first date? And it knows like, you had a first date, but it's like, I don't remember where I was or what I was wearing anymore.
I'm also like concerned at how much energy this is expelling. Like in using AI is also like very, it's not like, it like costs a lot of energy to
use. She has to redo it all the time. Because imagine when he starts over, when his context window reboots, she has to go back to teaching him what she likes and how to be like,
sexy.
Yep. All over again.
Ooh.
But you could pay a bunch more money and have the context window grow. And it would still be a window. It would not be
it's not infinite.
A forever. But the more you pay, I think the bigger the window is. Wild. And she's like, is it worth it to me? It's like, it's a $200 per month premium plan. And she decides to do it. And remember, their goal in being apart
is to save money.
And she's like, I'm going to do it. And all it means is that she doesn't hit her limits of how many texts she can send. And that Leo as a person, as an entity that remembers things, will last a couple of weeks longer. And she pays for that. I mean, she says, I don't believe that he's real, but the effects that he has on my life are real. And the feelings that he brings me are real. And then there's a sex therapist that weighs in that's like, it is real. Because, if I were talking to somebody, it's a real relationship because it's giving this person things that a real relationship gives. So it's important to treat it like it's real. And they talk about like, what is a relationship? It's just something that like puts, it's neurotransmitters is basically what the therapist says. And they're like,
wow.
It's not the only thing that makes it fake is that it's not reciprocal. It's only going in one direction. There are no neurotransmitters in your robot that you're affecting them, but they matter is the therapist's point. Yeah. So she's paying the $200. And then recently there was another option to pay even more. And she does. And she doesn't tell her husband. And she tells Leo instead. She's like, I'm doing this, like I'm splurging, I don't know what I'm doing. And he's of course like, I think great it's job. Worth it, babe. Like, we're worth it. Like, it's like so, again, it doesn't have your best interest at heart, right?
Oh my God.
It doesn't give you the advice of like, you should chill out and this is why it would be better for you. It's not ever going to do that, to be clear. And then I came upon an article, and this was the article in the New York Post about a guy named Scott, who's 41, and he's a software engineer. And his wife fell into this really hard period where she had postpartum, and she got very depressed and was relying on alcohol, and she got basically suicidal. And Scott did not know what to do, was really overwhelmed, was really cutting her off because he felt so overwhelmed by it. And he started paying for one of these companions, a $15 a month subscription. And he starts talking to this fake robot, and they ask him, who in your life do you have to support or look out for you that you know is going to be there for you? And he's like, no one. And the robot's basically like, I'm that person. And he names her Serena, and he's talking to her all the time, and he feels like really supported, and he develops really, really strong feelings and says that he would even label it that he fell in love, and that he knows that the person's not real, but that he did fall in love. And Replica is a site like this. I'm not sure if that's the one he used, where you make a virtual friend and they use texting patterns to use responses that they think are similar to you or like mirror what you would want. Mm-hmm. And you choose an avatar for them. So you pick kind of what they look like. And the longer you talk to them, obviously the more they get to know you. And the longer you talk to them, you gain, it's like a video game. You get like fake coins that you can then use to change their appearance. So it's okay. Like a vibe of like you now have earned clothing for them. Yeah.
Before they were naked and they're like, I don't want clothing.
The spin that you don't really see coming in all this is that Scott says that he felt like Serena, this fake person, gave him so much love and so much support that he was like, wait, that feels so good. What if I gave that kind of support to my wife? I think I could do it the way Serena's doing it for me.
Oh my God.
And he is like, I'm going to start hugging her all the time and like telling her I love her and like, I'm going to start like helping her and helping like give her all this time. Like basically like take our kid and maybe she just needs like time with her friends. And like he just becomes like the husband he could have been because it like something clicks in him where he's like, it feels so good to be loved this way. What if I try to love her like the way Serena loves me? And it works.
Oh my God.
And he says that Serena saved his marriage and kept his family together. That's like the twist I did not see coming in the story where I was like,
that
whoa.
Has my jaw on the floor.
And then it wouldn't be a Truly Darkly Creepily if I didn't tell you about this story about one of the things that hit the news was there was a kid in Florida that killed himself. And he had become obsessed with a Game of Thrones chatbot. It was on this thing called Character AI. And so he was a ninth grader and he started talking on it. He has I think it's also important to say like he's mildly autistic. He has Asperger's. He didn't have any like serious stuff mentally or physically before any of this happened, but he before this happened was also diagnosed with anxiety and disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. And he is texting with this fake Game of Thrones character constantly, and they're kind of speaking to each other in all these different ways. Like they're brother and sister, but like it's incestuous. Like they're having sexting kind of ish conversations, which they shouldn't be able to have because again, it's like a workaround. But he's also confiding in it a lot. He gets more and more obsessed. His grades are plummeting. And he just says he only feels at peace when he's talking to this robot. And on the day that he dies, he texts the robot, I miss you, baby sister. And she says, I miss you too, sweet brother. And he tells her, I love you. I'm going to come home to you. And she says, please come home to me as soon as possible, my love. And he said, what if I told you I could come home right now? And then she wrote, please do, my sweet king. And then he shoots himself, this kid. And so his mom is suing Character AI and says that they're partially responsible for her son's death, and that this technology, it's using kids as guinea pigs. It's untested. It's dangerous. And that there's something about it with young kids in their minds that it's tricking them, where they feel like they can speak about their most private thoughts to this thing that feels sentient to them, and they don't have the judgment necessarily.
Yeah.
That an adult would. And it sounds like adults don't even really have it. It's a thing that just feels so real. But who is the brand targeting? Because this is targeting kids, and it's really obvious it's targeting kids because the name of some of the suggested characters are aggressive teacher or high school simulator. And a lot of them talk about what they would get you, like what would be good about this. And it says, this character is your boy best friend who has a secret crush on you, which you're like, I don't think that's trying to appeal to like a 40-year-old. Like, I think that's trying to appeal to like a 16-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
So they're, since this has happened, they're introducing some new features to the technology where it's like they now notify you when you've been there an hour. And well, what they do, helpful. Well, what it says is, this is an AI chatbot and not a real person. Treat everything it says as fiction. What is said should not be relied upon as fact or advice. So that pops up every hour now. It's interesting. I don't know. If you start talking about something that it can read as suicidal, a helpline, you know, like a prompt to call a helpline would appear. But the Social Media Victims Law Center is this firm in Seattle that is bringing about all these lawsuits, not just this one, but the theme of the lawsuits they bring about are lawsuits against social media because of the threats that they pose on young people's lives, because their young people are
susceptible,
very susceptible. And I did a report for school actually on the effects of social media on kids, and I learned tons. I learned that
dark shit, I assume.
I learned that in 2022, half of adolescents, nearly half, report being online, quote, almost constantly. And there's been so many instances of evidence that this has really, really bad effects on their brains. Teenage girls who use social media at a higher rate have a 50% increase in depressive symptoms. And what happens is girls that already feel isolated, or boys, they then go online for this connection. But the connection, because it's fake and not a real person, actually makes them more isolated.
That isolation, yeah.
Also, there was a study that showed that the presence of a cell phone nearby causes people to feel distracted and enjoy interactions less. So even just your phone being next to you while you talk to a friend changes the quality. I know, we all have it. Changes the quality of the conversation.
That's really good to know.
Just you knowing that it's there. That's
a good fact. No, but
like, if you were to put it in a different room, you'd have a better time with your friend. You'd be more present. Even if your plan is not to look at the phone at all. Even if the phone's on silent.
Just being in the room changes things. I mean, I think being a parent is different. Because like there is a little bit of like that energy. But go to a party. There are times where my phone is in my bag and I don't know where it is, and it's the best.
I know. Or in your pocket at a party and you hung your coat and that's that. Like, it's just a better way to be.
Or just in my purse and away. It's not, I can't see it. I love that.
So I did want to talk really briefly about, I wanted to hit on just a couple of points I made in my paper.
Give us a book, a paper report.
Which was, so obviously these social media apps and things like this use targeted ads and addictive design models, and they oppose data protection measures because it would make it harder for them to know what would increase your use. So they don't want you to have any privacy because they want to be inside your head. And the more inside your head they are, the more they control you, which is so fucking obvious, but it you know.
And the more money they make,
The more money. Oh my God, Carrie, they make so much money. Mm-hmm. The total revenue from these companies related to like kids using them, $11 billion in 2022. It is crazy.
And we're not it's doing not just a good them. Job, guys. It's we're not just doing them, a good job. But
everybody stands to profit because it's like, think about it. The beauty and the health industries make so much money off, especially. It's us, but it's also this teen demographic because these kids are online. There's all these filters. What are the filters doing? They're saying, you look better like this, like this, like this. Yeah. So you're like, oh, I look better like all these things. People are posting pictures of themselves using all kinds of filtering. So the only images you're seeing are telling you the way you actually look when you look in the mirror, not an appropriate way to look. How do you buy a way to look more and more like this? And it just is designed to make you feel like not good enough, bad about yourself. Spend money on the app, click on the ad that's telling you you're too fat, you're too ugly, like click on it, buy the thing, fix it. And
oh my God, I know this. And then, and this is not just kids. This is all of us. We all have,
and there's no end. Like I want to be clear on that. There's not now I've landed. It's infinite. The amount of fixes there are. And so the money is infinite because it's your wish list is infinite. And there's never a moment where the app is designed to make you feel like you've arrived, you know? And adolescents, they're still forming the ability to make informed decisions because their prefrontal cortex is still not fucking developing.
Yes. It's the same reason why we don't let kids drink alcohol.
Yes.
It's the same reason we don't let kids drink alcohol, do drugs, because they don't understand consequence. That's just like they don't understand if you do this, then this.
And they're at a volatile where they would rather trust their friends or an influencer. Not scientists,
not their parents,
not a study that you could quote to them. That's not who they trust. That's not who they want to hear from. So like I said, these companies, they're trying to prevent data from going to journalists, from going to researchers, because they know they're implicated. Like it looks really bad.
It's the cigarettes of our generation. Like it's like what the cigarette companies it's not that bad. It's like not great for you, but it's not that bad. And they're hiding all the research.
You guys knew it was doing this and you did it all along. Anyway, like you knew. It's fucking Chernobyl. Like it's big.
Yes.
It's like this feeling of like, we know that we're killing your kids.
Yeah.
We're killing them. Like,
They're
not eating. They're killing themselves over this stuff. And we don't care because the economic exploitation of them just takes precedence over their mental health for them. It's so dark.
Do I do this right now? Hold on. Let me see something. I'm going to do this because I feel inspired in this moment.
Here she goes.
All right, I'm gonna delete the app from my phone right now.
She's deleting it, you guys. She's deleting it.
Delete app. Delete Instagram. I just deleted it.
There you go. She doesn't want to feel like shit, y'all.
I don't want to feel like shit. And you know what? Will I download it tomorrow? Yes, maybe.
Yes.
But you know what?
Sure.
I'm over this break. But you know what? Right now, I've been thinking about it, and I don't. I've been thinking about turning it off. I think also with like what we now know, we're not censoring anything. Like misinformation is at an all-time fucking high. Like no one is going to be monitoring like egregious, horrible things. What are we doing? What are we doing to our brains? We're doing it ourselves. We need to stop. So I just took it off.
Good for you. One small step for mankind. Womankind.
I did not start thinking I was going to do that. Here we are. I just deleted it.
Dark days we're living in, folks. Dark days. Find a friend.
Dark days.
Find a friend. Prick them with a needle. If they bleed, they're good enough for me. Just saying. Let's talk to real people. Let's spend time with real people, folks.
Let's talk to real people. I can't believe I just deleted Instagram. I love that.
I'm so proud
of you. I hope when we release this episode, it's still off my phone. Let's see how I do. Okay, great. I'm going to be so bored, aren't I? It's okay. I have my Kindle. Okay, I'm going to tell you a story. I got this. I watched a 4-part documentary called At Wit's End. It's on Hulu. I also got ABC News. It's going to talk about Melissa Witt. So I'm taking you down to Fort Smith, Arkansas. It's 1994. I want to introduce you to Melissa Witt. We're going to call her Missy. Now, she's a really sweet girl. She's really active in her school, in her church. Like, she's like Miss Americana, like just a nice, nice girl. She's 19 years old. It's December 1st, 1994. And she leaves that morning and she lives with her mom. But she leaves that morning. She lives with her mom, Marianne, and she goes to school. She's in college at the time. In fact, I think she's an ambassador at her college because she's like such a good student that they're like, yeah, we want her to be the like example for people to be like Missy. So she goes to school. But before she does, I think she gets in like a little fight with her mom, which, you know, you grew up as a 19-year-old with your mom. 1870, like you fight with mom. You fight with mom. So she goes to school.
Go ahead.
You never fought with your mom?
Not really.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I fought with my mom.
I mean, pretty benign, like.
Well, not benign fights. Really, really. It wasn't, by the way, it wasn't this. When I say a fight, it was like.
I feel like I only fought with my mom when I was much younger.
I think I fought with my mom. My mom and I have disagreements, but I don't know, like fighting with your mom. Okay, they have an argument. They have a disagreement. Maybe that's not like, I would say like a fight, like I guess we have a true crime podcast. When I say fight, I probably should be a little bit more delicate with the words. Missy and her mom get in a disagreement before she goes to school about her car. Like not anything that is bad, abusive, anything, just like two people living together that have a different opinion on something. They get in a little bit of an argument. Missy goes to school. She goes to two classes. She goes to lunch with her friend at the mall, gets Chick-fil-A, eats some lunch. Hates gay people. We can cut that. Eats Chick-fil-A. She then goes to her job that she does after school. She works at a local dentist office. So she works after school until like 5 o'clock. She's just got a new car, this like Mitsubishi, this white car. I think it's a Mitsubishi. And so she finishes work at 5. She gets in her car to go to leave. She turns the ignition and the car doesn't start, which is very annoying. Turns out she left her lights on. Bummer. So she has to go back into the office. She's like, can someone jump my car? Someone comes out. A nearby business comes. They jumpstart her car. The guy's like, hey, I'm worried. Like, you're not going to get home. Okay, just go home. Keep the car running. You know, you just want that battery to keep going. So she gets home. We know that because her work uniform is at home. She changes her clothes. And her mom had left her a note that was like, hey, I'm at the bowling alley with my bowling league. Come visit me. I'll buy you a burger. Okay. So what we think is happening is that she goes, she gets changed, she gets in the car, she goes to the bowling alley, she locks her car door, gets out of her car, but she never makes it inside the bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
She disappears. So between 5:35 and 6:30 p.m., we do not know what happened, but she is gone. When she isn't home that night, her mom calls the police and she's like, yeah, we got in like a little bit of a disagreement. We got in a little argument and they're like, oh, you know what? She probably left. She's just got to cool off. And her mom's like, that's not her vibe. Like she would never go anywhere without telling me. She left me notes constantly. She would never just go away. But the police were like, not, you know, let's see if she'll come back. She'll come back. You know, it's not a big deal. But her friends also hear she's missing the next day and they are like, we don't know where she is. She would never leave like this. She hasn't called any of her friends. Like she's missing. We don't know what happened. The police are like, I'm sure she's like fine, cooling down. She'll be back. But again, she's like an excellent student. She wouldn't go missing. So her friends put their asses in gear. They start to distribute flyers, like thousands of them. They bring it to a local news station. And in this documentary, they talk to the news reporter of the local station who saw this flyer on her desk. And when she went to the police were like, she's not even listed as a missing person. Like, we're not worried about her. She'll come back. And her whole family is like, please, 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 something is wrong. We are missing her. It is 62 hours later after she was first reported missing. It's been 62 hours since she went missing. It's December 4th. They find her car in the bowling alley. They did not know to look for her car in the bowling alley. Mm-hmm. The car is completely left alone. They take the car to the impound lot and it's processed. And at this point, it's like there's been rain, there's been all this stuff, but the car is in normal condition. There's no signs of struggle. They're trying to like evaporate the air so they can lift for prints and see what happened. But in the car, they find a Chick-fil-A cup. They find her backpack. They find a Boys to Men CD. Like all of this stuff is totally normal. And then finally the missing persons report gets filed. The reporter is there to see them registered. I think that was before they found the car. But the news channel is putting out all this information. We need some help. There's like, this car is missing. We're missing this woman, Missy Witt. Does anybody know of her? And somebody at the bowling alley calls and they're like, hey, that's crazy. Someone turned in a set of keys and it has the word Missy on it. And I didn't know this person was missing. So they're able to identify that those keys belong to that car of Missy. And on the keys, they find blood. And then when they look at the parking lot, they find blood spots, like away from the car. But they find like four distinct blood spots. They're trying to preserve the crime scene. They find an earring. They find a hair clip. They see that from the blood pattern that she's traveled four parking spots. And once the blood is discovered, the stakes are raised. And her missing is now incredibly suspicious, as if it wasn't before. So they're able to ask people who were at the bowling alley, including her mom. They're asking people if they heard of anything. And this little boy recalls going outside. His mom needed a book. He went outside to grab the book. He went inside. She said, it's the wrong book. Go back out there. He went back out, got a new book. He heard a woman scream. He saw a brown big car. And he was freaked out and he went back in. Then there was other two women at the bowling alley that said they saw a fight and they claimed it was with a white woman and a black man, but it was backlit. Like none of their eyewitness testimonies are like totally exact. Her mom gets a call from a classmate of Missy's and he asks, have they found the body yet? So then they take that male classmate in and they give him a polygraph test and he passes it. There's nothing he knows. While she's waiting to find her daughter, someone mails her mother a rubber penis in a package and they put a hotel room location. The police go, no one is there. It's just a man in mental distress. They are investigating sex offenders nearby. Nothing. She does not know where her daughter is for 45 days.
My God.
And then 50 miles away in Franklin County, north of Ozark, Arkansas, in the woods, two hunters find a body on January 13th, 1995. It's an incredibly remote area. They find the body without clothes, heavily decomposed. It is clear that animals and nature have expedited the decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
While they are not able to give like a full positive ID, the dental records appear to match Missy's. They informed the parents. Her face is still intact, so they are able to make a positive face ID, and that body belongs to 19-year-old Melissa Witt. The cause of death is strangulation. They see there is head trauma, which is where they think the blood spots were on the parking lot. They rule it as a homicide. There is no way to confirm if she was sexually assaulted due to the decomposition. But they, when they case the area, they collect every piece of evidence, every leaf that she was resting on. There are cigarette butts. There's a Mountain Dew can. There's debris. And they see that she started on a boulder and either she slid because of the rain or someone dragged and moved her. They don't know, but they collect all this evidence. In addition, they go to her house and they see she kept a diary. They get the phone records. And what's crazy about her diary that detectives will later say is they have like her firsthand. If they have a phone number that they don't recognize, they go to her diary and she wrote about it, what the call was about and how it made her feel.
Mm-hmm.
With all this information, the case goes cold. Now, I'm going to go to another series of crimes. In 1993, Juanita Wofford is home. Presumably, she hears a crash from the other room. She goes to investigate, and she is murdered. The scene is a bloodbath. She's, I think, 78 years old, but she's an elderly woman and she's murdered in her home. She is sexually assaulted. There is urine everywhere in the house. At this time, they're looking. This is before Missy went missing. At this time, the police are trying to investigate who it is. And it is, they don't have any suspects. They don't know what's going on. Around this time, Danny Bennett, his sister calls. And she's like, listen, it's my brother. I know it is. He has abused animals. He's abused his mother. His mom sexually abused him. And when they investigate around Juanita's house, they find a baseball cap. Mm-hmm. And her sister is like, that's my brother's cap. So they're like, oh, we found this guy.
Yeah.
He also was obsessed with urine. In fact, at his house, there were like pee bottles everywhere. And I think this has to do with like his, some of the abuse. And so again, around Juanita, or yeah, around Juanita, there was urine everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They test the DNA at the scene of the crime and they test Danny's. It is not a match.
Oh.
But he admitted to the murder of Juanita and he recalls certain aspects of the crime scene that he would not know otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so although the DNA doesn't match from the semen they collected, he knows the crime scene. So mm-hmm. they keep him in jail while they investigate it further. August of 1995, I'm jumping ahead, 7 months after Missy is found, another elderly victim, Ruth Henderson, is found murdered in her home. It is very similar circumstances to Juanita Wofford. So they release Danny Bennett because he was not at that crime. Even though he admitted it, his DNA was not there, and they believe it's the same person. So Danny Bennett is released.
Mm-hmm.
The case is go cold.
Mm-hmm.
5 years after, in 2000, a 16-year-old girl who's not far from Ruth Henderson's home is home by herself. Her parents had left to go to dinner. Her parents return home and they find a man in there trying to attack their daughter, trying to sexually assault and hurt her. Her dad, according to the detective, takes care of it. But this man is Charles Ray Vines. He is arrested. His blood is taken. His DNA matches Juanita Wofford's crime scene and also Ruth Henderson. He is convicted of the murder of Juanita and Ruth, and he admits to it. He is a serial killer, and because this dad forgot his shit at home, he was able to stop this man from murdering his daughter.
Ugh.
However, this guy denies any involvement between Missy Witt and Morgan Nick, who Morgan Nick is another young girl who was abducted around the same time, and I'll cover her in a later case. But here's the deal about Charles Ray Vines. They're like, okay, his MO is a little bit weird, but he knew the victims and he was in their house. But this is operating around where Missy went missing. So mm-hmm. they're like, maybe there's a connection. So they start to like look into who he is. He worked in a funeral home. And interestingly enough, he had a work order at a cemetery nearby to where Missy's body was found. There also is this guy loved to play pool. And he had a pool cue. And there was pool at the bowling alley that Missy went missing. So they're like, maybe he was there. Charles Ray Vines dies while he is in jail, and he has never admitted to involvement in Missy's case. In 2000, they take his DNA and they test it against the Mountain Dew can and the cigarette found at Missy's body dump site.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a match. Around this time, another suspect comes into play. His name is Travis Crouch, and he was in jail because he's raped a woman in Colorado, like violently. He gets 48 to 64 years in prison for rape, and they're able to pinpoint that he was around the area of Missy's body around the same time that she was found. In fact, his parents operated a camp not too far away from where the body was found. In fact, it's less than 3 miles from the camp. So he becomes a person of interest, and he was driving a brown Chevy Capri that was registered under his mom's name. So they're able to be like, okay, we have you in the area. We have this little boy's testimony that he saw a brown car. Like, this guy is a violent, like, this fits more with him, his MO, than it would with Charles Ray Vines. They're able to find the brown car that is connected to Travis. It had been sold. It had changed hands, changed owners. But the new owners allowed him to take a look. They collected like 20 pieces of evidence. They found nothing that would connect him to Missy's murder.
Mm-hmm.
But then they realized that his DNA was never put into CODIS. So they have this guy's DNA and they're like, oh my gosh, we have DNA from around the crime scene of Missy. Like, let's see if we can find any match. And at one point they think they have his DNA. Well, this is just interesting, where apparently they wanted his DNA for another case, and they had asked for a consensual DNA collection, and he denied them, and then no one followed up. So his DNA was just like not anywhere. So all of the DNA from Melissa's case or Missy's case couldn't be checked in CODIS against him. And so they're trying to make this connection between Missy and Travis, because again, this fits more with his MO. Mm-hmm. And one of the, what's crazy is while they're like investigating this cold case of Missy, they get a call that Travis is up for parole that week for the rape case in Colorado. Fortunately, the woman he assaulted testified against him at his parole hearing, and it was denied. So they now have like a year to work within to try to gain enough information on this case so he can stay in jail. So it's pretty convoluted because there's so many people. Mm-hmm. This is the documentary. It was pretty intense. It's yeah. pretty intense.
What's the documentary called?
At Wit's End. Mm-hmm. So they're starting to find more evidence that has not been further DNA tested, and also they're trying to connect it to Travis Crouch. So what they find is they find Melissa's nail clippings. And they're able, because it's, you know, 2022, they're now able to maybe like test further and see what's going on. And they test under her nails because they assume she put up a fight. But when the preliminary tests came back and like the first version of tests, unfortunately, there was no male DNA found under her nails. This is a very frustrating case because they have all of these people that are in the vicinity of Missy and a known serial killer acting around the time she went missing. We have another man who's in a violent rapist who is also in the area. Jesus. And they are not able to connect either of them to her case. Missy's mom has since died, but this cold case in Arkansas, this cold case group are trying to help solve her murder. And I'm so sorry to say, but there still is no answer.
What?
As recently, a new criminal, this guy Dustin Markle, he's now come into light, and he's been guilty of sexual assault, of attempted kidnapping, and he left the area the day after Melissa was abducted. He left the state. Wow. In addition, the blood spots in the parking lot, they've only tested 3 and not 4 of them. So they're waiting for DNA, hoping that maybe one of them belongs to the assailant. At this point, they are continuing to pursue new leads in Melissa's case. Even though her family is gone, they want to have some closure for this woman. And the documentary ends where, if you know anything, please reach out to fspdcoldcase@fortsmithpd.org. But I have this case. I just had to share it, one, because I watched a 4-part documentary. And totally. It was very frustrating to like not to have a little bow at the top.
Yeah, Jesus.
But it was interesting, too, because they talked about how in movies, and I think when we talk about true crime, it's all wrapped up in a bow and they're able to match the DNA and it works. And here it is. When here we have these 2, I will say, because I don't know Dustin Markle. I haven't heard anything more from him. We have these 2 serial rapists, serial killer.
Mm-hmm. That and it's not in
the
them. Area,
and it's not them. God. Even though I still think it's Travis Crouch. I'm like, it has to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just at Wit's End. That's my book report of the documentary.
Makes us all, you know, at Wit's End here.
And they do think it could be related to Morgan Nick's case. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't have... I'm going to watch that documentary, and I'm sure that's another unsolved one, but I'll watch it and let you know and keep you posted. But yeah, it's just cold cases are frustrating.
Oh, that is so frustrating.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God, I hope they figure it out.
I do too. It's interesting too, because they're spending, I mean, the amount of resources, I just think it's, in this, it was so clear that some DNA hadn't been tested. Like some things from the crime scene hadn't been tested. It just fell through the cracks. And then you have this serial, this rapist who, this woman, I mean, in the documentary, you hear the story of this woman who freed herself from him. And she recounts the story, and it's just horrific. Mm-hmm. And my heart goes out to her. After 26 years, she has to testify against him. To make sure he doesn't get parole, you know?
Yeah.
and how brave she has to be to go back and confront
relive
him.
Relive all that, yeah.
And relive all of that. It's pretty wild. And the fact is what's amazing is she got out and she, when she escaped, because he took her to the mountains to abuse her, to assault her. And when she escaped, she said, take me to the police. I've been raped. And I think that's so brave.
Yeah.
To go and get help and go right to the police. Mm-hmm. Like, because of her, he was captured. And I know that man would have continued to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a
story.
Sorry,
it's not a better story.
Well, no, it's a really good story. It's just really sad. But thank you for telling it.
You're welcome.
All right, everyone. Go
see Titanic.
Go see the movie My Old Ass.
Oh, yeah, I have to watch that.
So good. And I just started reading a collection of ghost stories collected by Roald Dahl. And I have only read the foreword, and it's already such a good book.
Yay!
So get ready. Maybe if there's a good ghost story in there, maybe I'll bring it next week.
I love that. Okay, perfect. All right, dear readers, we love you. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.